Chapter 1. I stood in the middle of the Korean forest and stared at the three spaceships that sat in the clearing. Not many things shocked me anymore during the dinosaur apocalypse, but the sudden arrival of two massive alien dudes did the trick. The night sky was an inky black above us, and the full moon shone down onto the hazy force fields of the three spacecraft. Broken branches littered the ground from where the two newest ships had landed, and I rubbed my eyes to check if I was just having a drunken hallucination. Drinking my weight at my wedding tonight had definitely made everything a little blurry. The evening breeze was chilly, and I could feel goosebumps on my arms as I stood in my wedding suit. But I couldn't decide if the goosebumps were from the cold or if it was the shock of everything I'd just heard. The alien sharp gun slung over my back was a familiar presence, and I touched the cool bronze metal to remind myself that everything wasn't a dream. I was really standing here with three aliens as they discussed the impending end of the world, which still seemed to be a very likely scenario. No matter how crazy things had gotten, this was not something I imagined myself discussing with aliens ever in my life, let alone a couple of weeks ago. By now I had traveled from Ravenscar, England, all the way to the South Korean island of Jeju, and it felt like the world filled with bloodthirsty beasts had become the new normal. I'd sort of accepted this, and with my gang of badass girls by my side, the idea was a hell of a lot less stressful than it could have been. We had already fought off too many dinos to count, fucked in universities and castles, narrowly escaped death numerous times, and fired alien weapons at massive herds of dinosaurs. As far as the end of the world went, I had somehow managed to have a pretty good time. For a while, we hadn't known where the dinosaurs were coming from, or how they seemed to be evolving into even more skilled hunters. All we knew was that portals had started to open up all over the world, and herds of prehistoric creatures stormed into our lives. But the dinosaurs only became smarter over time, and we had even witnessed different species coming together to form megaherds. Even the herbivores had joined with the carnivores to get in on the action. And it was clear that eating us for sustenance wasn't the main goal. These scaly bastards wanted nothing more than to wipe us off the face of the earth. Then everything changed when Adhara literally crash-landed into our lives. The beautiful lilac-skinned alien had been convinced that humanity was actually an ancient race called Alacarics, who used to live on Mars. The Alacarics were ruthless beings who apparently looked a hell of a lot like humans, aside from the gills they wore on their abdomens. And they'd spent years in a bloody war with Adhara's people. The war was eventually won, and the Alacarics were forced to surrender. But now, billions of years had passed. And unfortunately, our Hadron Collider in CERN sent out a signal which Adhara's people believed to be a deadly weapon getting fired up by the Alacarics once more. Adhara's race knew they couldn't sustain another war like that one. Her people's planet was slowly dying, and her race was dying off as well. So they did the only thing they could think of. The aliens tore through the fabric of the universe, opened every portal they could, and sent dinosaurs to Earth in order to wipe out as many Alacarics as possible. They'd hoped to gain the ultimate upper hand in the battle with the Alacarics, and when that was done, they'd hoped to gain our planet for their own as well. It was an effective plan, and the world had been turned upside down overnight. I imagine the global population must have been at least halved since then. But my girls and I had been some of the lucky ones. It turned out I was weirdly skilled at kicking dino ass, and I'd managed to protect my lovers from harm while training them up to be dino-slaying machines. Adhara had recently joined with my team of deadly lovers, too, but that was the opposite of what her people had intended for her to do here. The beautiful alien was sent with a team of scouts to evaluate the damage done to the planet and report back if it was safe for the entire alien fleet of her people to arrive. It had taken a hell of a lot of convincing for her to see that we had never contacted alien life before, never mind had any kind of rivalry with them. Once she realized that humans and Alacarics were entirely different races, she was horrified. Adhara had desperately tried to contact her people to explain the mistake, and she was determined to do everything in her power to help save Earth. After a lot of effort, she had managed to contact the last two scouts outside our atmosphere, and they were able to get the message passed on. I really thought that was going to be the end of everything. I figured the portals would stop opening soon after, the dinosaurs would get wiped out, and our lives could go back to some form of normal. My optimism had just been crushed, though, and the two male scouts that I was staring at now just informed us that the message hadn't worked out how we planned. The higher-ups of Adhara's race thought that the scouts had been all taken hostage by their hated enemies, and that the Alacarics forced them to send the message, which meant that an entire fleet of alien spaceships were still headed to Earth, and with their incredible weaponry and advanced technology, it wouldn't be long until humanity disappeared forever. Now all I could do was watch as the scouts discussed the situation in their native tongue, and the wind sent a chill down the back of my neck. I felt numb as the aliens spoke, and I looked over at my beautiful girls who had been by my side throughout everything. Only a few hours ago, I had gotten married to Hae-won, the brilliant, badass Korean daughter of the underground kingpin. She looked like a gothic princess in her dark makeup tonight, and her ebony hair danced in the breeze. Her electric blue eyes were fixed on the aliens in front of us, and now that I knew she was carrying my child, I wanted nothing more than to take her into my arms and reassure her that I would always protect her and our family. Becca stood beside Hae-won and tugged at the material of her own wedding dress. The blonde Brit had become my wife at the same ceremony as my Korean lover, and she bit her lip as she watched the aliens discuss. Becca was a feisty, pouty, and brave bombshell who had been desperate to have a child with me, and her dream had recently come true when she found out she was pregnant too. Seeing her so adorably happy at our wedding made me want to keep that smile on her face forever. But right now, she frowned as tensely as Kat did on her other side. Kat was a straight-talking corporal who had joined our group after she fled from her army base. And she definitely drank too much at my wedding tonight, but I figured she'd sobered up almost as much as me already. Her dirty blonde curls had started to fall from her messy bun, and her hazel eyes sparkled under the moonlight. She looked concerned, but as determined as ever to take on this next challenge. And this was one of the things that made me so head over heels for her. The gorgeous soldier was a fighting machine in a curvy, perfectly sculpted body, and she was as thorough in the bed as she was in combat. Then there was Adhara, the newest member of our family, and an alien beauty I'd already grown to love. Her silver hair had draped over her lilac shoulders, and she looked stunning in her green dress from my wedding. Not only was Adhara an incredible and stoic fighter and pilot, but she'd invited me into her spaceship to have unbelievably hot sex for the first time only yesterday. What more could a guy ask for? These four girls were my family, and I knew that I would do whatever it took to stop this incoming fleet. But at the moment, I couldn't even begin to imagine how. My mind raced as I tried to work out our next step, and how the hell I could stop an advanced alien army who were already on the warpath. Hearing Hae-won's father Quan start to bark orders at his armed men didn't help me relax. I spun around to see the man known as the Underground King point to the black trucks, and a few of his men jumped into the driver's seats. Quan had greeted me with a steely judgment when we first met, which was somewhat warranted. I'd showed up with his only daughter and three other girls on my arms, and it had taken a few bloody dino battles and some good old-fashioned honesty to gain his approval. But I eventually won him over to believing I was good enough for his little girl. Having a guy with his own underground base on my side had been an awesome experience, and he had even gifted me a Porsche for a wedding present. The scar-covered man was intimidating as hell, but having him as my father-in-law was a serious win, especially in an apocalypse. Quan had his own army of devoted workers, and they all seemed to be trained fighters who had no problem taking down dinos. There was no doubt that Quan was a born leader, who would sustain through anything this world threw at him, and having his respect meant the world to me. "What's going on?" I asked, and Quan glanced my way as the truck started to reverse.
"I need to save my people," he said stoically. "If aliens are going to come, there is more chance of survival underground in the base."
Quan had been looking after two of the nearby villages since the portals had appeared. He supplied them with food and supplies, as well as guns and ammo, and he wasn't afraid to get his hands dirty with dino fighting. The guy could shoot, and the K2 rifle swung over his shoulder had saved countless lives.
"We're going to get the villagers,"
Sun He explained. The youngest of Heiwan's big brothers had always been so cheery, and it hurt to see him agitated. He jumped into a truck with his older brothers, Tae and Minjun, and the trio quickly started to drive back through the woods. Heiwan came from a family of ninja-like fighters, and it really seemed that there was no end to their bravery, even in the dead of night in a dino-infested forest. Ji was Heiwan's mother, and she had welcomed us from the moment we stepped foot onto the base. She looked like a gorgeous older version of her daughter, and had made sure we were well-fed and looked after. Now, Ji and Kwan spoke hurriedly in Korean, and she kissed his cheek before she turned and ran toward the base with two armed men on either side. The older Korean beauty blew a kiss to Heiwan as she passed, and then broke into a surprisingly fast sprint over the bumpy forest floor.
"Ji is going to get rooms ready,"
Kwan said as he rubbed his scar-covered neck.
"It will be a tight fit for everyone, but she will make it work."
"You're a good man," I nodded. "We're gonna fight this."
"If anyone can, it is you," Kwan said,
and with that he leapt into the nearest truck and started the engine.
"I am going to help correct the villagers. Protect my precious daughter."
"Always," I promised, and Heiwan laced her fingers into mine as we watched her father's truck drive off.
"Jason,"
Adhara called, and I looked back at the lilac-skinned alien to see her beckon me over. The two burly male scouts glared at me, and I tried not to think about the whole army they had slung on their backs. Alien weapons had proven to be ridiculously advanced compared to ours. Adhara had shown us sharp guns, which were rifle-like guns that shot pointed bullets at lightning speed. They even had a function that could evaporate flesh, and had proven useful in cleaning up dino corpses. She gave us our own to keep, and after a few lessons, I had become a pro. The bullets could bring down huge dinos with one shot, and seemed to have endless ammo stores inside. Then there were blasters, which were like next-level grenade launchers. The cylindrical weapons sat on the shoulder and fired out balls of purple alien plasma. If you shoot one of those into a dinosaur, you got a whole fireworks show of blood and guts. But keeping a safe distance from the blast was a must. Adhara's fire swords had to be the coolest-looking of the bunch, though, with dark green hilts and a large black button which summoned a glistening black blade to action. The swords were red-hot around the blade and could cut through the thickest of hides as if they were slicing warm butter. Our trusty SA-80 rifles and Glocks had gotten us through a lot, but there was no denying that the alien armory was a serious upgrade. They also looked twice as intimidating on the aliens themselves. The two scouts were both well-built guys, and they had the same lilac-toned skin as Adhara. Their silvery flight suits clung to their muscles, and their silver buzz cuts almost sparkled under the moon. Their chiseled features left stark shadows all over their stoic faces, and just like Adhara, they had a set of gills on their muscular necks. I walked with the girls over to the group of aliens, and Heiwan held onto me tightly. I knew we wouldn't be able to pronounce the scouts' alien names, and I wondered if we should give them human ones for convenience. We had helped Adhara pick her name, and she seemed to love it, but something told me these two guys weren't looking for any nicknames from me. I was about to introduce myself when Adhara grabbed my shirt and started to undo the buttons. I said, as the pretty alien tugged at my clothing. Maybe this isn't the time for that?
I am not mating,
Adhara replied flatly.
I am showing your stomach.
She said something in her native language, and I tried not to stand too awkwardly as she presented my bare chest and abdomen to the scouts. The alien studied my body closely, and I felt like I was at some kind of medical examination. They gestured for me to spin, and I slowly turned around and caught Kat's eye as she smirked. See? I asked. No gills, just flesh and muscle and a bit of sweat. The two lilac men raised their eyebrows and hurriedly spoke in low hums. Then they both turned to me, and the taller of the two offered me a single nod.
You are not allocatic,
the taller one decided. You didn't believe her? I asked, and the alien shrugged.
I had suspicion, he said. Need to check.
I quickly buttoned my shirt back up as the evening breeze made me shiver, and I tried to get my head straight to figure out what we could do. So, I said, you told the fleet that we weren't Alacarics, but they didn't believe you? You're still going to send the fleet down to try and kill all humans and wipe out the planet?
They will kill the humus, the tall alien nodded.
Humans,
Becca corrected.
Yes, them, the alien agreed. But our people wish to stay. We use the resources, so we will not damage the land. Do not be worried.
Great,
Cat huffed.
Who cares if we all die, as long as the national parks stay intact?
The curly-haired soldier rolled her eyes, and I quickly gave her a kiss on the cheek before I turned back to the aliens.
What do we do?
Heiwan asked quietly.
This cannot be the end.
It's not. Jason always has a plan,
Kat said and turned to me.
Right. We'll find a way to fix this.
The corporal's eyes were wide, and it felt like a lifetime ago that we had been drunkenly dancing and celebrating the wedding. She looked to me with such steady belief and determination, and I rubbed my eyes in trying to think of anything other than the fact that I could only have hours left to live. I had to save my girls and my future kids. I had to save my new family here in Korea and back in England. And if my folks were still alive, I had to save them, too. There wasn't any other option, but it all seemed so impossible at the moment. I was just some guy who got swept up in the dino apocalypse, and now it was on me to save the world. Something roared nearby, and I realized that it didn't matter how I got here. All that mattered was protecting my family, and I just had to take one step at a time. I took a moment to study the trees around us, and it seemed that we were safe from dinos for the time being. The wind rustled the leaves of the palm trees, but I couldn't see any other signs of movement. I swung my sharp gun to my front just in case and checked the night sky for leathery wings, and then I looked back at Adhara. How long do we have? I asked. Until the fleets get here.
Maybe a few weeks,
Becca asked hopefully.
We could come up with a plan in that time, right? Easy peasy.
The gorgeous blonde's voice was higher pitched than normal, and I could sense that she was close to freaking out. Kat seemed to sense the same thing, and she gently stroked Becca's hair while the supermodel Brit let out a tiny whimper.
Oh, it's my wedding day,
Becca pouted at the soldier.
I know, sweetie,
Kat muttered.
It's been a hell of a ride, too. Hands down, best wedding I've ever gone to.
Really?
Becca's eyes lit up a little, and the corporal nodded vigorously to make sure she stayed cheered up.
We have map,
the shorter alien said. What kind of map? I asked.
It send update on the travel of the ships, he answered. Has not updated.
Is that good?
Heiwan checked.
Not good or bad,
Adhara explained.
The ships travel in bursts. It is difficult to put into human words. They move so quickly. They appear on the radar when they materialize in different parts of the sectors.
Let's go and meet them, then!
Becca cried as she threw her hands up.
We can use your ship, Adhara. We just go meet them and show off our bellies or whatever, and they'll call it off.
No,
the lilac woman said sadly.
They think we are hostages of war. They would blow up the ship before we had time to say anything. Not what I had in mind,
Becca grimaced. What if they could see you inside the ship? I asked. Surely they wouldn't hurt you.
They would think it was a trap,
Adhara said.
They do not realize how primitive human technology is. They think you are Alacaric. They could think it is a hologram.
This can't be happening,
Becca whispered, and her brown eyes filled up with tears as she rubbed her stomach. I came over to pull her against me for a moment, and I gently stroked her cheek and wiped a tear away. Then my desperation started to turn into anger as I gazed into her big brown eyes. My pregnant lovers should be putting their feet up and drinking tea while I went down on them, not stressing out about asshole aliens coming to destroy us all. It was meant to be our wedding night, and I should be tangled up in bed with my gorgeous wives and lovers by now, making sure each one of them was pleasured and absolutely filled with my cum. If there was anything left worth fighting for, it was the promise of those nights. How can we convince them? I asked as I turned back to the aliens. Is there any way we can change their minds?
You said your parents are important,
Kat reminded Adhara.
They would listen to you, right?
Adhara nodded, and her emerald eyes stared down at the ground as she bit her lip. I knew how guilty she felt about the whole situation, and that she would do anything to try and save us. But if all it took was to prove I didn't have gills, then there had to be a way to get in front of her parents. All I had to do was lift up my shirt and the world could be saved. My life was fucking ridiculous.
Can we send them a picture?
Becca asked.
Like, just take a shot of Jason's abs and text it to them?
Do aliens have text?
Kat snorted.
Yes, why not?
Haywan agreed.
Adhara, you must have even better cameras than we do. We could make a video of all of us showing our berries.
Text it to them?
Adhara asked as she wrinkled her nose.
What is this?
Like sending a message from one device to another, I said. But in picture form.
This would not be proof.
Adhara shook her head.
Pictures can be made to look like anything. They are of no value, no truth. Humans can do this also?
Photoshop.
Kat nodded.
Yeah, I guess it needs to be in person or it won't work.
Like I said,
Adhara shrugged,
my people do not realize how bad your technology is. They will not believe anything that they do not see right in front of them. I don't suppose they'd zoom in real quick when they get here before they blast us all to smithereens?
Becca asked. All three aliens furrowed their brows, and the blonde Brit shrank back a little as the men looked at her like she was the most primitive creature they'd ever met.
Just checking,
she mumbled. I looked over my shoulder as another truck engine started and then drove off through the forest, and I realized that Quan's men had all vanished. I only hoped that they could bring all the villagers to safety in time. They had been so welcoming to me and the girls, and had even celebrated our wedding with us outside the beautiful temple. The whole celebration had been a reminder that there were still so many good people left in the world to fight for, and I couldn't let them down now.
My father will protect his people,
Haywan said, when she saw the look on my face.
But we need to know how long we have to work with if we're going to fix this. Let us check the map,
Adhara nodded.
Come.
The two male aliens turned away and led us around the back of one of their ships. There were crushed palm trees that stuck out beside the doorway, and the aliens leapt through first as I waited by the door with the girls. When the force field buzzed off, I stepped inside to see the ship was very similar to Adhara's, except the lighting had a green hue to it. Then I walked into the dim control room and I noticed that the pilot seat was slightly broader than Adhara's. The taller alien guy opened the bedroom door, and I craned my neck just a bit to see his room had a little shelf built next to the door. He grabbed something that looked like an iPad from it, and he started to tap around on the screen. The device flashed electric blue and showed a complex-looking diagram with different planets separated into small boxes. Each planet appeared to actually be rotating at different speeds, and I wondered if this was a real-time rendition of other worlds just sitting in the palm of his hands. Then he scrolled along, and the image expanded to show thousands more boxes.
What is this?
Becca asked as she twirled a strand of hair. My blonde lover looked less panicked as she peered at the alien machine, and still had a hand on her stomach, and I was relieved to see her pressing onward in this challenge.
It shows us which sector and solar plane the mothership is in,
Adhara explained.
But only when it is stationary. It will not appear when the ship is moving. Goes in bursts.
I leaned over to get a better look at the screen, but I couldn't see anything other than the grid and planets. So the mothership is moving right now? I asked. Does that mean the fleet is too?
The fleet is always slightly behind,
Adhara nodded.
The mothership is where my parents are, along with the other officials who are in charge.
The two male scouts hummed and clicked to each other as one scrolled through the map, and I got the impression that it could be a while until we had our answer.
This has to be the most stressful wedding day ever,
Haywan sighed.
It is not how I planned our wedding night,
Becca agreed and began pacing around the control room.
Yes, I wish we could do mating,
Adhara sighed, and the male aliens glanced at her but didn't say a word. Becca's pacing quickened, and I reached out a hand to grab her waist. Then I pulled her close, and she sniffed as she buried her head in my chest.
"We're gonna figure this out," I whispered,
as I stroked her soft blonde hair.
I did not fight this long through a dino apocalypse to be killed for having non-existent gills.
Becca giggled and nodded as she pulled back.
So true.
"We just need to get to that ship,"
Kat said,
"and show off Jason's sculpted abs. I know your abs are awesome, and I never pictured them saving the world, but I kind of love this. I'm proud in the weirdest way."
I grinned at the pretty soldier, and the map suddenly made a loud beeping sound.
"What was that?"
Haywan gasped.
"Did something happen?"
I watched the male scouts glance at each other, and my stomach dropped. I could tell by their hurried humming that it wasn't good news. What if we were too late, and the fleet was literally about to evaporate every human in existence? Adhara's emerald eyes met mine, and a single tear ran down her pretty face. I swiftly came closer and looked at the map, and a new little addition had appeared inside one of the boxes. It was a silver circle which I assumed represented the mothership, and it glowed softly as the beeps continued.
"Well?"
Kat asked as she put her hands on her hips.
"What does it mean? Do we have a few weeks?
Months?"
Becca added in a small voice. I knew neither of these could be the case. And I prepared myself for the worst as I looked at the little silver circle on the screen.
"They are near,"
Adhara sniffed as she looked back at the map.
"Within the Alcaranician sector."
"Yeah, but that's like hundreds of Sora planes big, right?"
Haywan asked.
"Yes, but it will not be a long time until they arrive in this solar plane,"
the beautiful alien answered. "That's when they'll attack?" I asked.
"As soon as they are in Earth's orbit,"
Adhara said, and quickly wiped away the tear on her perfect face.
"Not far at all, once in the solar plane. The fleet will have to travel slower to reach the planet without collision, but still very fast."
"How close are they to this solar plane?" I asked urgently. "How much time do we have?"
"Maybe a few days,"
Adhara replied, and Becca gripped my arm.
"But no longer than a week, for definite."
Silence fell over the ship, and as Becca's grip on me tightened, I looked out at the dark forest. My heart thrummed at a million miles an hour, my palms began to sweat, and I felt nausea creep up my throat. We had a few days to save humanity, and even after everything we had been through, there was no doubt that we were about to enter the fight of our lives. And I didn't even have the beginnings of a plan yet.